Hello and welcome to episode number 97 of the Agro Innovations Podcast, all things related and debated in agriculture. I'm your host, Frank Aragona. This episode of the Agro Innovations Podcast has been released onto our website, agroinnovations.com/podcast, on Monday, July 12th, 2010. This episode of the podcast is another installment in the Holistic Management series of the Agro Innovations Podcast. The Holistic Management series is sponsored by Holistic Management International. You can learn more about holistic management at holisticmanagement.org. I will link to that on the show notes for this episode of the podcast. Holistic Management, Healthy Land, Healthy Profits. Be sure to visit their website to learn more. And also to let the listeners know that the views and opinions expressed in this episode of the podcast are those of the participants only and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Holistic Management International. Today we are joined by Josh Eganoff, who is a PhD candidate with the Odum School of Ecology, which is part of the University of Georgia. Josh is currently developing a research proposal that will evaluate the relationships between management typologies and sustainability indicators. His approach is a participatory one that will directly involve producers from the Indiana Beef Alliance, and we'll be looking at how holistic management practitioners make decisions. Josh, welcome to the Agro Innovations Podcast.
Thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's have you start by giving us a summary of your research. Where will it be conducted, and what will the general research design be?
Well, first, I did want to back up and say thank you for inviting me to be on the show. I had the pleasure of working with Bob Chadwick in the Klamath Basin a few years ago, and Bob, something that he impressed upon me was that everyone always has something to share, and I know I'm early in my career as a researcher, but I wanted to view today's discussion as a start to an ongoing dialogue, and I do welcome people's feedback, and I encourage people to, you know, respond to what we're talking about today. So I just wanted to start there and say, you know, thank you, and I hope that we can do that sort of thing here today. But to answer your question, I'm working on a piece of research with some people in southern Indiana. I have a fairly large group of researchers assisting my efforts, and we're also working with a number of actual beef cattle producers in southern Indiana. And the general purpose of this research project is to evaluate how qualitative differences in management lead to quantitative differences in outcomes as they relate to sustainability. And over the past few years, I've been thinking about this project and developed a hypothesis that, you know, I think that there's a significant relationship between a beef cattle grazer's, you know, decision-making framework or management typology and those performance outcomes that relate to some sustainability indicators as such. And so really, there are a few objectives that we're trying to accomplish here with this project, the first one being to determine those decision-making frameworks and management typologies for this group of cattle producers that we're going to work with. We also want to determine if there is a relationship between these management characteristics and the sustainability, using some sustainability indicators. And the third step is really more of a result of the project. It's more developmental in nature, and we hope that we can determine some producer needs for technical advice as it relates to improving farm sustainability. So the group of people that have committed to work with me are part of a beef cooperative in southern Indiana known as the Indiana Beef Alliance. And these folks, or this alliance, is comprised of over 30 farms across six key cattle producing counties in southern Indiana. And these guys have committed to work with me. And I feel like they're a really great group to work with because they're very diverse in their backgrounds, and I think they're a good sampling of the sort of socioeconomic and demographic diversity that's common, you know, across most people participating in beef cattle production in the Midwest. And just to back up a little bit, some of the concepts and the methods that we're going to draw from in this research project come from a number of tools that are already being put into practice by farmers. The first one of those is something called the Sustainable Decision Tool. and this tool was developed by two researchers working at Warren Wilson College in Asheville, North Carolina. Those are Drs. Laura Lennick and Susan Kask. The second tool that we're really wanting to use is the Holistic Management Framework. And the third tool that we really would like to incorporate into this project is the monitoring toolbox from the Land Stewardship Project in Minnesota. And so the basic premise is that all farmers use, you know, a suite of more or less formal indicators to inform their decisions regarding their management. And what we're hypothesizing is that you are going to see differences among which indicators, you know, farmers choose and use in their day-to-day decision making. What these tools do for us is they provide a list of indicators that these beef producers can choose from to indicate how they, you know, plan, monitor, and control their management decisions. And they're very useful tools for highlighting their behavior. So from this, I think that we're going to be able to identify, you know, the decision-making frameworks that these people use, also be able to identify some management typologies that might categorize their activities. And we're trying to do this all with consideration of what their particular goals, objectives, and constraints might be.
Okay, now a lot of research about grazing and range management has been conducted in experimental paddocks with herds that are managed and run by researchers. I'm currently in the process of reviewing a lot of this previous research, and I see that this is often the case, and even research projects that are being proposed today have a similar approach. Now, many times researchers don't include producers in this process. How does your approach differ? And tell us about the research design, which will include producers in every step of the process from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. And like you said, we are using farmer participatory research methods. And so what that means is that we're trying to engage this group of producers in the entire process of research design, the monitoring, implementation of the monitoring plans, and also the communication of results. And so really the first step of what we're trying to do is to evaluate and define what the current attainable level of sustainability performance is for this farm, and that's largely determined by factors, limiting factors that are outside the control of the manager. And so once we determine what the attainable level of sustainability is for area, we're going to work with these individuals to have them articulate what their individual goals and aims are as relate to this attainable level of sustainability. And so the sustainability that we're assessing is a relative definition of sustainability based on factors that limit the potential sustainability for an area. The third step, we're going to have them describe how they make decisions about achieving their desired level of sustainability. And we're going to do this by having them highlight those indicators that are most important to their decision making. And so you can see already we're really having them steer the research process and what we're actually going to go out and study. So once we have them actually communicate which indicators are most important, we'll have them rank those indicators, and we'll use this to describe particular decision-making frameworks and their typologies based on their selection and their goals. Once we have this in place, we want to move beyond that and have them conduct a self-evaluation of their own performance based on those indicators that they choose and to inform their decision-making. And then we're going to work with these farmers to facilitate more in-depth evaluation of the indicators that they choose, and we might perhaps add some indicators that might provide some complementary data. We're gonna gather and measure indicator performance data over the period, I think, of a couple of years, and we'll be able to take all of this information and develop some comprehensive sustainability profiles of their performance that are based both on their self-evaluations and the complementary independent assessments that we're going to you know, conduct in concert with their own efforts. So I'm trying to impress upon, I guess, the audience here today that all throughout the process, the farmers are going to be engaged, like I said, making decisions about what actually is important to them and what they want to study. And then we're going to commit all of our resources to research and dig more deeply into those factors.
Okay, now this is, it's a little bit abstract. Can you give us some concrete examples of some of these sustainability indicators that a farmer might identify, and maybe some of these sustainability indicators that you and your research team are going to be taking measurements on?
Okay. Okay, so for instance, you know, just knowing the group of farmers that I work with, one thing that is one indicator that is really important to them when they're thinking about their operations are factors related to production. You know, they may be looking at average daily rate of gain, or either per animal, or looking at yields per acre, for instance, and thinking about their production in those terms. Whereas something that we may want to look at, you know, in concert with their production numbers are things like ratios of annuals to perennials in their pasture systems to get at maybe some more highly or more specific levels of information about what's actually being produced in their fields, not just what the yield might be from the field. And so we're hoping that, you know, by coupling those sorts of data together, we can provide a more complete picture of not just what's being produced from the land, but why it might be being produced at the level that it is.
Okay, now methodologically, how do you relate some of those quantitative indicators back to management typologies? If somebody is practicing holistic management as their decision-making framework, how does that then feed back into some kind of evaluation mechanism relative to the sustainability indicators?
Part of the process is that they're going to choose and rank, let's say, their top 10 indicators. And these indicators are going to include economic factors, maybe some production factors or ecological factors, and some quality of life factors like their satisfaction from farming or the stress level that they might incur. And so their choice and ranking of those factors, sort of the combination of them, is going to inform how they make decisions and perhaps highlight, let's say, for instance, one farmer chooses five of their 10 indicators from the quality of life category. And you might identify that person as being the sort of farmer that really focuses on his or her quality of life. And so when we go out into the field and start to, or into their homes even, and start to gather more information about their self-evaluation of their performance, you know, considering those factors and digging more deeply into those and helping them discover those things, we might be able to relate some information about, for instance, their management typology being a quality of life sort of typology, relating that back to their performance in the field. And you may find that their performance for things like production factors may not be as high because they're focusing on their quality of life more. So it's getting at the idea that folks manage for what they want to see. You're most effective when you manage for what you want to see and what you're paying attention to. And so what we're trying to highlight is the importance of managing for what you want to see by identifying those typologies.
Yeah, and that's a very important premise of holistic management that often gets overlooked. One of the virtues of holistic management is that it empowers producers to make good decisions within very complex natural and social systems. Talk about the role holistic management can play in helping a researcher to understand this dynamic.
I think that's a great question, and you know, holistic management is obviously something that I've thought a lot about And so we're taking a step back and thinking about that sort of thing. I think holistic management has really done a lot to inform, you know, my thinking about how people manage the land. And one thing that's, you know, become very apparent to me is that I think there's been a great deal of work put into the development of tools that aid farmers in whole farm planning and management for sustainability. And I think sustainability is a complex business. I think, you know, people are operating in different environments and cultures and economies and deal with different regulations. And I think, you know, individuals themselves are extremely diverse. And I don't really feel that there's a silver bullet system of management that fully incorporates and deals with this diversity. But I do think that there are several tools like holistic management that are available that assist producers in promoting sustainable management behaviors. And so this is really what has drawn me to holistic management, because I think it's a very natural choice for this sort of study. It helps us, you know, deconstruct the complexity of this sort of management into, you know, as Alan Savory had mentioned, into daily decision making. I also think holistic management is a wonderful communication tool, and it really allows people to articulate, especially in holistic management through the formation of a holistic goal, those sorts of qualities that they're aiming for, you know, in terms of their economic situations and their quality of life and the ecology of the farm that really guides the level of sustainability that they're shooting for. And I think one of holistic management's you know, primary contributions to this project will be assisting us in discovering the level of sustainability that these participants do desire. We actually want to walk them through the process of forming a holistic goal, and in doing so, I think that we're going to gain a lot of insight as to what their goals and attitudes and beliefs about their aims for sustainability of their farm really are. And I think it's going to help us make, you know, qualitative comparisons between the individual goals for sustainability and that of this attainable level of sustainability that we're identifying for a research area. I think really another way that the holistic management framework helps out is it's also a very useful analytical tool for evaluating human behavior, you know, as it relates to the management of land. I think it'll help us deconstruct some of the humanistic elements of farm management into, you know, what holistic management uses, which is the plan, monitor, control, and replan feedback loop. This is really what we're aiming to study with this research, is how do people go through that process, you know, when we describe decision-making frameworks. This is really what we're talking about, is that feedback loop that people might employ in their management. And we want to see how it might inform us about people's attitudes and beliefs about sustainability. And I think that it's very useful in those terms.
So it seems like the people who will be participating in your research, you know, they're going to have a stake in the research, and they're going to have a stake in the outcomes. And at the same time, the research itself becomes a mechanism for spreading, you know, ideas and concepts that you think are useful for managing sustainability. I mean, this is a very different approach to research that has been traditionally taken. It seems to me like you're thinking about your research holistically. Can you talk about the concept of holism and how it has affected your research design, and how this contrasts with a more reductionist approach?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. As I mentioned earlier, I think one interesting thing to me is how the qualitative differences in management lead to these different quantitative differences and outcomes. And I think something that, you know, typifies a traditional approach in ag sustainability research is to look at how quantitative differences in management lead to quantitative differences in outcomes related to sustainability. So if you look in the literature, I think there are multitudes of agronomic type studies which evaluate quantitative differences in, you know, pasture rotation strategies, stocking rates, breed selection, stock densities, cultivar production, fertilizer use efficiencies, all of these sorts of things. And what we often see with these types of research projects that are trying to, you know, compare quantitative differences in management to quantitative outcomes are that they're usually attempted in two different ways. One of them is on-farm application of research that results in, you know, these statistically insignificant differences in outcomes for a particular set of trials, say, to, you know, test differences in, for example, management-intensive grazing. And then there's a second approach, which uses the actual ag research station or the university station or research fields to apply this same bit of research. And what you get are results that are very statistically significant from a scientific standpoint, but may have little practical application in the farm setting. And I think both are results of a highly reductionistic approach where there's believed to be a high amount of experimental control. And so what I'm advocating is that there's not only room for, but an absolute necessity for research that is both holistic in approach and applied in nature. I think, you know, it's time to start thinking about synthesizing the results from this sort of more technical reductionistic research approach and start evaluating their application on farm with the incorporation of the farmer as both, you know, an agent of research and the subject of research. What we're really interested in, especially, you know, in the first example that I gave of the reductionistic approach, there's an on-farm application of this research, and there's a lot of insignificant, statistically insignificant differences in outcomes. And what I'm hypothesizing is that the reason that you don't see that level of significance on the farm is not due to a lack of control, but it's due to differences in, you know, qualitative differences in the manager, the person that's actually applying the treatments. You know, if it's management-intensive grazing, I don't think management-intensive grazing as a standalone tool for managing land is what dictates success. It's the quality of the management that is provided while applying management-intensive grazing as a tool.
And also what the manager is trying to achieve, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's something I was hoping to relate here is that, you know, everyone has different aims for what they're trying to achieve, especially as it relates to sustainability. Not everyone's perhaps trying to reach a full attainable level of sustainability. Their actual level might be further from what's attainable, but they might actually be performing quite well based on their own attitudes and beliefs about where they want to be.
You have talked about the overall questions that you're trying to answer, and let me just articulate this from your research project. The question you've posed is, how does an individual's decision-making lead to particular outcomes related to the profitability, ecological health, and quality of life of the farmscape and its people? I haven't seen that many research projects in ecological sciences that have chosen to look at decision-making as the primary driver. What is it, I mean, where did this kind of desire to look at decision-making come from? I mean, you could have gone maybe down a more standard route and just looked at, you know, different fertilizer applications and just called it a day and gotten your PhD that way. You've obviously gone down a much more complex road in terms of your research. Where does that come from?
Well, it's a good question. I think I grew up in a farm family in this part of Indiana where I'm living now, near Bloomington, Indiana. And, you know, I have a strong appreciation for, I guess, the practical side of managing a farm. And so when I was thinking about, you know, agricultural sustainability, I was sort of, you know, dissatisfied with that more traditional approach. And I really, you know, do feel like, you know, people matter in the landscape. And I think ecology as a discipline recognizes that. You'll see it in the definition you know, definitions of what an ecosystem is. You know, people have come to recognize that humans are an important part of the ecosystem, but I don't really think we're going far enough with including humans in an ecosystem. We're usually just looking at the effects of what humans do to the landscape, and we're not really digging deeper into the question of why are those effects coming about. And so I think research and ag sustainability management, you know, must by definition include a study of these differences in farm management, you know, as decided by how people make decisions. And I don't really, my personal take on things is I don't know how you can really study management without studying people. I think, you know, by definition, management involves people and the decisions that we make. And, you know, I think these, I don't believe that aggregating, you know, a suite of technologies and quantitative measures and management protocols and calling it an evaluation of management is a complete picture of management on the landscape. I think it fails to recognize the greatest, you know, determinant of the success of those systems, which is the manager. And something we're alluding to a second ago, and what we're really trying to do is get beyond, you know, reducing ag management to a set of rules, and we're trying to discover, you know, what those qualitative differences are in management strategies and behaviors that lead to levels of sustainability that are closer to what's attainable. You know, to take that a step further, I think that there are a lot of factors related to management, such as goal setting and planning and awareness and observation and analysis, control, and that are missing from those traditional ag research projects. And that's something that I hope in my work and as I conduct research in my own career that I can help communicate to people.
Well, participatory research often requires a combination of methodologies from different fields. I have done some participatory research myself, and I was drawing from fields like agronomy and statistics, but also from fields that you wouldn't normally associate, like anthropology. You are also planning to use a combination of qualitative and quantitative indicators in your research. Can you talk about these methodological considerations, and what are some of the difficulties that are presented in this approach?
Well, first, I think using a mix of qualitative and quantitative indicators that draw from different disciplines, there are problems related to the amount of control over, you know, the type and amount of data that you receive. You can go out and, you know, start collecting data. Some of it's going to be from interviews and surveys you know, could be enormous amounts of narrative that you have to wade through at the end of the day. You know, other types of data are going to be more clean. You know, for instance, if you go out and want to measure the amount of farm income that contributes to the family's total income, it's a fairly simple matter once people are willing to share that information with you, to go out and get it and then convert it into a format that you were seeking in the first place, like a percentage. I think the same is true if you wanted to go out and measure the percentage of soil organic matter in the soil. You go out, you pull your soil cores, you send them off for analysis, and you get back a percentage. What I think is more difficult is, difficult to grapple with is some of these qualitative indicators, like, for instance, a farmer's satisfaction from farming. You go out and try to collect that data, and it's a subjective measure of the farmer's attitude about his own satisfaction. And you can design a sampling framework that's standardizable across all the people that you interview, but you're not going to necessarily receive a standardized response. And so one thing that you have to do is you have to take that data and wade through it and you know, categorize this data perhaps into performance levels, which is something that we're proposing to do. And you have to take, you know, you don't have to take this data, but it's useful to take this data and transform it into something that is quantitative, like into a categorical format. And that's the sort of thing that we're going to have to grapple with in our research project, and this is something that we're considering as we go out and collect data, is this qualitative data, we need to collect it in such a way that we can transfer it into a quantitative format and be able to compare these quantitative indicators to those qualitative indicators. And I think that's one challenge. I think mixed method approaches do come under a good deal of criticism. I think one reason this is because it's hard for one single, primary researcher to become a black belt expert in all the different, methods that are required to collect this data. And so I think it's a very important thing to have a strong group of people with a diversity of skills and disciplinary backgrounds that can support, in this instance, I'm going to be the primary researcher in this project, and I really tried to assimilate a team of people, of anthropologists. I have a geographer on my research committee, have a forage extension specialist. We're really trying to draw from a diversity of backgrounds to ensure that the work that I do is well guided and directed by those people, and they can offer their suggestions and comments along the way and help me put together a story that is meaningful and is onerous of the different backgrounds from which they came.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting that you, at the end there, you said to tell a story, and I think that's one of the best things researchers can do is actually tell a story that's driven by data, as opposed to just, inundating someone with a bunch of graphs and figures and saying, here's what I did. If you have an actual narrative that you can share with people, it just seems like that's a way that people can grasp things and conceptualize things much more easily, no matter what your background is.
Right. And I do agree with you, Frank. And I wasn't, I also wanted to back up there a second. We're not going to take all the qualitative data and try to turn it into a quantitative format. I think there's also going to be an accompanying interesting narrative that's going to come out of this. And, I think it's going to be, like you said, an interesting, very informative story to tell that's going to come from that sort of blending a natural history approach to a systems research approach of sorts.
Okay, now let's talk about funding, which is always kind of a tricky issue with research, but even more so when you're trying to fund something that's innovative like this. It's holistic in nature, and the path you've chosen isn't necessarily the path of least resistance. What are the challenges in funding this kind of research?
I think one thing in proposing this sort of project is that when you start talking about these mixed methods and gathering a lot of qualitative information, I think there, at least at times from reviewers, I've received comments that hint to a perceived lack of experimental control. And I think these projects are really complicated and do require evaluation from a variety of angles. And I think more often than not, projects that are more reductionistic and focused on perhaps, testing or experimenting with a particular cultivar of a plant or forage that may produce higher yields in a more sustainable manner, may be a little more acceptable or graspable by people that are providing funding for research. And I think a lot of people may be interested in more holistic types of research projects, but it may be easier for some people to stay within their comfort range and seek funding and execute research that is, highly specialized and tidy. But that being said, I think there is a growing appreciation by those providing funding that the applied and adaptive nature of this sort of research, does require a relinquishment of the demands to maintain absolute experimental control, And I think they're increasingly recognizing that there's a trade-off there and what you gain from that trade-off and relinquishing some of that control is a gaining of insights, you know, that reveal and even celebrate the extremely, you know, personal and place-based nature of a farmer's goals and management, and that the discovery of these sorts of things give the results, which is, you know, the actual achieved level of sustainability, a lot of meaning. And I also think, I really enjoyed listening to the podcast with Peter Donovan, and something that he talked about in his interview is that, you know, a lot of what we're trying to accomplish with this research is coming up with divergent solutions to developing a sustainable agriculture that relies on changes in behaviors and attitudes. And I don't think funding dedicated to this type of research, which is trying to discover divergent solutions, is quite as sexy, you know, as, you know, other types of research that develop convergent solutions, like new technologies or new gadgets. I think the products of research that come up with divergent solutions aren't necessarily physical things you can hold in your hands or, you know, even show to your friends. I think they're solutions that point towards more formative change, and they're not always concrete physical products. And I think that might be, you know, also something that may be a negative for us as we go try to move forward with funding or securing funding.
Yeah, well, I would like to make a few comments. One is the idea of experimental control in ecological research is an illusion. I would challenge anybody who is a researcher out there to go out and try to replicate previous studies exactly as they were done. This is very, very difficult to do because rain patterns are different from year to year. Fluctuations in temperature are different from year to year. It's kind of a classic case of physics envy. You know, where physicists and chemists, to some degree, but a somewhat lesser degree than physicists, have this total control over their experimental design. You know, maybe in laboratory conditions for biological science, that is achieved to some degree. But certainly, once we actually get out into the nitty-gritty, complex systems that are ecosystems, and then we, you know, put the complexity of people's decision-making on top of that, it is just an illusion to think that we can replicate any of these studies reliably from one year to the next or from one study to the next. So it's interesting that people bring that up, and it's interesting that they fail to see the fallacy in their thinking on that.
Well, I think even in addition to all the external factors, it might vary, you know, project to project, year to year, like, you know, what you mentioned, climate, soil differences, those sorts of things. You know, often what I see when we read literature, and I know you've highlighted this as well, or even the treatments themselves are not similar. You know, not all grazing is not all the same. You know, even a management-intensive treatment and grazing treatment in different projects is rarely comparable. You know, if you're looking across the body of literature and you're trying to compare management intensive grazing in this study to one across the country somewhere to somewhere else, the treatments themselves that are under the control of those conducting the research is not easily comparable, and there's a lack of control there.
You are in the early stages of this, but you've come a long way in developing your concept and the funding proposal. Looking back, what advice would you give to others who are interested in exploring similar research questions?
Don't do it. Stick to traditional agronomic research. I'm just kidding. I really do like thinking about these things. I get really excited about it. I think one important thing is, you know, I don't only want to facilitate research in an academic way. I also really plan to explore these sorts of questions experientially, you know, in my own farming adventures. And so, you know, take it for what it's worth, but one piece of advice I'd like to give to people that are wanting to do holistic research is to, you know, go out and practice what you preach. And I mean really practice it, you know, make your livelihood depend on it, you know, because I think that you're gonna learn more by putting it into practice and having there be consequences associated with those things. I just think that if you're going out and giving advice to people about how they should be doing things and what you think are good ideas, I think that you should hold your own feet to the fire, so to speak, and really understand what it means to make the sorts of recommendations that you make. And I think, you know, even in a research capacity, you have to support innovation by being part of it. And, you know, it's important to become a member of the community of people and the landscape that you're working in. I think your awareness as a researcher will be greater. The trust that you generate between you and the people you work with will be greater. And I think you'll gain a real sense of commitment to producing the best possible science and telling the best possible story by doing that. And I guess one more thing I'd like to encourage people to do is at times as I've been exploring, you know, wanting to become a holistic researcher, I think a lot of young scientists are capable of specializing in holistic science. And I know that sounds oxymoronic, but I think holistic research can be an entire subdiscipline in and of itself. I think often when people think about holistic research, they conjures up ideas of these large projects that you see taking place where there are many, many people as part of a huge, you know, transdisciplinary team working on these things, and that is how holistic research gets done. It's a, you know, sort of fragmented into different disciplines, all putting their minds together and coming at things from their own vantage point. And I think it is important, you know, just like with my own research committee, to have those people on board backing you. But I think it's also very important to have someone that is trained as a holistic researcher, someone that can, you know, both keep an eye on the big picture of the entire research project and understand, you know, at least at a fundamental level, all the different sub-disciplines that are being brought together. That person's going to act as a catalyst or facilitator in, you know, conducting and making sure that those sorts of projects go off as they need to. So that would be another piece of advice that I would give. Is I've had a lot of people support me in my desire to, you know, be a holistic researcher. One of them, my advisor and mentor at school, is Dr. Carl Jordan from the Odom School of Ecology, and he has been great. You know, he has never once said, "I don't think you should do that." Just has always encouraged me to try to do things this way. And, you know, I thank those people. so I would encourage others, you know, not to be afraid to want to be a holistic researcher.
Okay, so now I'm going to put you on the spot here, and mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, I know that a lot of the times our expectations of of the research outcomes are often much different than the actual results, which I guess is, you know, part of the fun part of doing research. But mm-hmm. what do you anticipate will be the results of your research?
You know, I think there are two sorts of things. There's actual data results that are going to come out of this project. You know, in addition to being a research project, I also like to think that this is going to be a rural development project for people in this area. And so it's always been important to me that both those things happen with any sort of project that I work on. So, you know, from a technical standpoint, I really hope that we'll be able to relate, you know, the qualitative and quantitative gaps between, you know, an individual's sustainability goals and the attainable level of sustainability. I want to be able to relate those same qualitative and quantitative gaps between the actual level of sustainability a farm is achieving and what that attainable level might be. We're trying to account for instance, the magnitude of effect that an individual's decision making has on the gap between actual, you know, sustainability and what's attainable. And I think we want to be able to provide qualitative comparisons of those participating, or those people participating in this project and their decision-making frameworks as it relates to things like holistic management. You know, I think just because a person isn't trained in holistic management doesn't mean that, you know, their behaviors may not mimic something like holistic management. So what we may see here is that these people and their behavior may lead to high sustainability performance, and it might closely match something like HN. I think such, you know, these kinds of insights could highlight the need to marshal resources for training in things like holistic management, or, you know, any other processes or whole farm management tools out there that are going to assist people in making better decisions. So I think highlighting and comparing the qualitative differences in these management goals and strategies and what their outcomes might be has real practical implication, and I'm hoping to see that come out of the research. I think that if we can learn something about decision-making strategies that are effective, then we can use these as teaching tools for others that might want to enhance their own sustainability. And I think, you know, the differences and accompanying these particular skills of planning and observing and controlling situations, I think they're learnable. I think they're highly transferable, and they can be taught through all sorts of ways, like workshops, skills trainings, farmer-to-farmer mentoring. And I think these sorts of solutions are appealing because they yield results that are knowledge and skills intensive rather than capital intensive. And I think it's only going to serve to, you know, further strengthen sustainability for these farms in this area. So I think it's an important story that needs to be told so that we can direct some resources towards facilitating these sorts of innovation and practice.
Thank you very much for joining us today on the AgroInnovations podcast, and thank you for the research that you're doing. And hopefully, as you start to get results or after you complete the research, we can get an update in terms of what the results have been and, you know, what some of the lessons learned from doing the research were.
Certainly. Well, thank you again for letting me share this. And I do encourage people to please comment on what you've heard today. And I'd like to thank you for and everyone else, you know, holistic management and the other people that have been on the podcast for, you know, stimulating a lot of new ideas and thinking about this sort of work.
That concludes my interview with Josh Eganoff of the Odom School of Ecology. He's a PhD candidate there, and we were discussing many of the different aspects of his research, and Josh is certainly showing us the way in terms of developing some practical strategies for holistic research. So I appreciate Josh, the work that he's doing, and I appreciate his willingness to participate in this episode of the podcast. Again, this is another installment in the Holistic Management series of the AgroInnovations podcast. The Holistic Management series deals with many of the issues related to holistic management, from grazing research to holistic research. And the focus, as you can see, is on areas of research, data, and documentation. There will be more of these episodes in the Holistic Management series coming up in the next few months. So if you enjoy them, please stay tuned. Additionally, these episodes are published on the Data and Documentation blog of Holistic Management International, and I will link to that on the show notes for this episode. I am blogging there quite frequently these days about, I'm doing a literature review of many of the different past research efforts that have been conducted in this area. And so if this is something that you are interested in, if you're interested in management-intensive grazing, holistic planned grazing, and the different effects that these types of management decisions can have on the landscape, then you definitely want to check that blog out. A reminder that this and all episodes of the AgroInnovations podcast are released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. To learn more about that, you can visit creativecommons.org. AgroInnovations is on Twitter, twitter.com/agroinnovations. Holistic Management is also on Twitter. It is twitter.com/HM International. And I will link to the Twitter page for Holistic Management on the show notes for this episode as well. This is the AgroInnovations Podcast. I'm your host, Frank Aragona. Until next time, saludos.